Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. We recorded a special episode that you're about to hear with our good old friend Mark Cade from Australia. And what, maybe an hour or two after we recorded the episode, the news came out that Zach LaVine was traded. So, you know, most of the discussion that we had on this show is still relevant, still interesting, and probably even more entertaining in light of the news. But I thought it'd be good for Doug and I just to jump on real briefly and discuss this monumental trade in Bulls history and the end of an era with Zach LaVine as he moves on to the Sacramento Kings. What say you?
Are we talking about whether this was a good idea or just the end of Zach's era? I guess from an appreciation perspective, we probably both appreciated Zach more than maybe the fan base as a whole, thought he was a good player. Probably also both thought it was time to move on. And, you know, in this case, it's hard for me to say much about the value gotten. We shopped him for 2 years, right? Like, you kind of knew this just was what it was. Everyone was aware Zach was on the market. Everyone was bidding. You know, we talked about earlier when Caruso was traded, the idea that you have choices and leverage when there's multiple bidders. Like, there just wasn't a robust market for Zach. So it was kind of this or nothing is almost certainly the case. And I think this was a better directional move than nothing. It will depend, you know, what other moves follow this one. But I like this versus nothing. It wasn't an exciting return, but it does give us movable contracts in terms of Herder and Collins. Trey Jones might be redirected somewhere else prior to the deadline. I mean, he seems like on a value contract now. Wouldn't surprise me if we move him for a second or 2 second round picks in an expiring deal. So I think this opens up more flexibility and, you know, more importantly, it is a step in the direction towards trying to rebuild rather than just try to keep this thing going.
Let's just talk about the pieces that came in the trade. Herder, your first initial thoughts on him. I mean, I'm not excited about anybody that was brought back in this trade with the, you know, obviously the exception is I'm happy we actually own our first round pick again. We don't have to play this game of, you know, we finish 11th, we're going to give it up. But, you know, I don't see it. I'm not excited about any of these players, Zach Collins or even Trey in this trade. It just sounds like to you that you're happy that we've taken a direction that we're going to tank because that's exactly what will happen without Zach LaVine. Is that right?
It's not so much that I think we're going to tank per se. Like, I think we're going to keep our pick either way. We're currently 9th. But I think the idea is that, you know, Zach was here for 7 years. The relationship was worn out. This just, it wasn't a situation where I think you were going to rebuild with Zach. And so I think if you waited, there's a bigger risk that things go worse rather than better and that you can't move Zach again if anything happens. And so maybe this was 25 cents on the dollar of Zach's current value, but it was really easy to envision the scenario where you were going to be underwater and couldn't move him at all again. And so I think this is better than nothing. You get out of the salary, you have flexibility, you have pieces you can move easier because they're just smaller deals, more set up to make other trades. I'm not excited about anyone. I think Kevin Herter's an interesting kid in the sense that he could be a decent reclamation project for the Bulls. Like, he was basically a 40% shooter a couple of years ago. It was 36% last year. He's 30% this year. You know, it feels to me like he could be someone who, in Chicago's offense, which is just launching threes like crazy, could come back and shoot a little bit better, and then all of a sudden, you know, have second round pick or some other value next year. And, you know, Zach Collins is just going to be a fill-in, you know, assuming there's a follow-up to trade Vooch, you know, it's fine. He's a body. He can fill in for a couple of years for whatever. I just think ultimately this gives you more tradable pieces to match salaries, to do other stuff. Like, going into next year's trade season, you'll have two guys at this $18 million range in expiring deals. And I think that puts you in a good position to make another trade. You know, if you want to try and match salaries with people, you want to be a facilitator with some of your cap room, you want to do something else, having these contracts that fit into what other teams are going to need to take on salary-wise, I think just puts you in a better spot. So, you know, I think it's more about flexibility and future, you know, development than it is about anything you got back. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious that Zach's a way, way, way better player than anything we got back. And we are just looking to probably start a rebuild. And this is, like I said, a good first step if it is the first step and there's other steps to follow. If this is kind of it, then it's like, what are we doing here still? So, I assume this is going to be step one of a multi-step plan, and we want to see the other steps to say holistically the strategy is good. But I think this is one step that most of us wanted to take.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the cold winter streets of Chicago. I look to my right, and it's the great one, Doug Tonis. But lo and behold, as I look way back in the back of the bus, like Waldo from the Hot for Teacher video, it's our old friend Mark K from Australia. How you doing, brother? Oh, my God. Come on up and sit with us.
No.
Are you there?
I'm there. I'm here. How are you, Frederick?
Oh, I'm doing awesome, Mark. Honestly, it's awesome to talk to you, buddy. I have to admit, over the last few years, I've really learned to love you on Twitter because you've started to agree with me in almost everything I type. And I think we've kind of, you finally progressed to the part where you've just become another version of me on Twitter.
Well, I'm not sure if that's true.
And so with your absence, it's like my echo chamber is gone. No one else is typing the same things that I do. So you are missed, definitely missed. On Twitter. How you doing, buddy? What have you been up to? How's the kids? How's the life?
Yeah,
what's going on?
That's pretty much all I've been doing. Just being a dad. Work, being a dad, that sort of stuff. So it's been good. It's been good to get away from basketball more generally, but definitely Bulls basketball more importantly. It's been nice to have that reprieve. So it's been good. But just doing the family stuff. Nothing really beyond that at this stage, beyond work. It's my time is busy regardless. I don't have enough time for anything else, I guess is my point. So, two kids now. Daughter turns one in next month, so it's all going fast. But yeah, I'm good. How are you guys?
Living the dream. But I got to ask you, I have a hard time believing you just went cold turkey on the Bulls. You haven't been paying attention. Aren't you diving deep into what's going on here?
I haven't gone completely cold turkey. My intent was to go cold turkey, but I haven't been able to successfully... cease my relationship with the Bulls entirely. I'm still watching here and there, still following along here and there, still listening to you and Doug and Will and the CHGO guys. So I'm still connected in a lot of ways. So I haven't been able to completely disengage, but certainly not following to the same degree that I have in years past. Definitely not on Twitter anymore. Just not consuming it in the same manner that I used to, but still following along and still feel like I can... contribute to a podcast and make more salient points than yourself, but which is probably a low bar regardless, but I still think that's possible.
Well done. Doug, do you have anything to say to our
No, I mean,
friend?
I think Mark nailed it there. This is the perfect show to go on if you've not been paying a lot of attention recently, where you can still look intelligent and so yeah, good choice, Mark. You don't want to be on with the CHGO guys. Like Will might say a bunch of stuff that you're not sure how to react to, but with Fred and I think your odds of coming out looking good are way higher, so we're happy to have you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. Look, I'm still in contact with Will quite often. We still chat offline, but definitely not in my salary cap sheets or into the minutiae like I used to be. So yeah, I mean, William would have destroyed me regardless. Let's be clear. That handsome man would have done that even in my prime podcasting years, if assuming there was any. But like I said, it's just... I'm happy the Bulls still exist. Let me say this. I'm happy the Bulls still exist and that I'm somewhat still connected to them, because then it gives me this ability to reconnect with you guys. And this is why I wanted to do this, just to be able to catch up with you both. It's been a while. So the Bulls are a nice excuse to have this conversation.
I miss your reads on that show. You were so good on those commercials. And I also miss some of the banter before the show. My favorite of all time was when Mark was talking. Do you remember this one, Mark, where he said, "Hey, Will, my mom thinks you're very handsome and that you look exactly like me. Do you remember that one where you were going back and forth?"
I don't recall.
It was the most ridiculous backhanded compliments ever. But anyhow, let's go on to the news at hand. I mean, holy cow. You can tell a trade isn't really good when you have, your reaction is, did Shams get hacked? And basically go ask all your friends, is this real? Is this really happening? But what a seismic news with the trade of Luka Doncic over overnight. Was it in morning for you? How did you find out, Mark? Why don't you go a little bit into how you found out?
I thought you were referring to Billy Donovan only playing Mattis Bozelas, 13 minutes instead of 15 minutes. That's what I thought you were assuming the big news was. But the Luka Doncic trade. How it played out for me, Frederick, I was sitting on the couch maybe 9:30 p.m. last night. Randomly opened up, I think Blue Sky it is now that I'm on. And I saw the news there. I'm like, is this fake? Shams isn't on Blue Sky, but someone like copies his tweets over there. And I just assumed it was some nonsense. So then I had to go onto the websites and was trying to validate or verify it. And it turns out it was true. And I was legit cackling for probably 2 to 3 minutes. And my wife had no idea what the hell I was reacting to or why I was being laughing like a little child. But it was the most bizarre and shocking thing that I've seen in the NBA for God knows how long. I don't know if I've seen anything more
ever
bizarre than this, to be honest.
Agreed. Ever. Doug, what say you? What was your reaction?
I saw the news at like 5:30 in the morning when I woke up, and I was just like on an email that I got, and I'm like, okay, is today April Fool's Day? Because it just was like one of those things where you're not fully awake, and I'm like, no, I don't think it's April Fool's Day. And I'm like, is he just making some kind of like weird joke? It was like Mark Stein on the Stein line, the email. And I'm like, this can't be right. So then I like log into ESPN and it shows up there. And then I was like, oh, wow, I guess this is actually true. And, you know, I saw one of these funny things a buddy of mine texted to me. And it was something like the Nets turned 34-year-old Kevin Durant into Cam Johnson, Zaire Williams. And it's something like 11 first-round picks and swaps after you count everything they got from New York. And the Mavericks turned 25-year-old in his prime Luka Doncic into Anthony Davis, Max Christie, and a 2029 first. Like, I just don't know what to even say about it. It's like one of the worst things. You know, I legitimately early in the morning thought there just has to be some huge amount of money, like some illegal crypto transaction back and forth between people. Probably not, because in reality the risk is too high. But like, man, it just seems insane. Like, I don't know why the Mavericks would have even said like, well, we didn't talk to anyone but the Lakers. Like, how do you not just talk with other people and then get the Lakers 2031 first in this? Like, for sure the Lakers are going to fold on that, right? Like, I mean, even with that pick thrown in, it would be a bad trade for you. This was a shocker. It almost looked like a trade AK would make.
I'll say too, like, I love AD. Like, I Doug, you and I have famously argued about the value of Anthony Davis in previous episodes over the years. And, you know, I think I value everything he brings as like an interior defender and as a two-way player. He's an excellent player, and Lakers are 28-19, I think, primarily because of him, not LeBron. But he's 32 in March, and like, he hasn't exactly been a picture of durability for his career. The idea that you're taking a chance on him and Kyrie going forward as the best option to win a title, because it's like a go, you know, win now move, apparently, is insane. And, like, the idea that that's a better option than trying to get Luka to get in shape at the age of 25, I know he'll be 26 later this month, it's like, the most shocking, insane thing I've ever seen. And I'm an AD fan. Like, I do think the Mavs have a chance of being decent this year. Like, taking everything aside, I think they could probably get to the second round. I don't think they're going to get close to a title. Like, the whole thing that really just made me nauseous was when, you know, of course you see Nico Harrison go out there and he starts talking about, you know, defense wins championships. And I think that's the most, you know, it's the dumbest, stars win championships. There are always exceptions to the rule, every rule. And you can point to the 2004 Pistons, but the stars win championships is still the rule. Like, the Nuggets won because of Jokic, not because of their defense. They were like eighth, I think, that year in defensive efficiency. I mean, their defense was solid and it helped, but they won because of Jokic. And that mantra that you keep on hearing is so moronic and so overrated and so overused. And for this guy to throw that out there, like, just shows how incompetent he is. I'm not saying defense isn't important, but it just isn't as important as having a player like Luka. What say you, Mark?
Yeah, no, I think there is a world where the Mavericks are pretty good this season, assuming they can gel and make it all work, and I don't know, somehow the bracket falls right for them. And you know, they get to the second round or potentially the Western Conference Finals. Like I think that's in play, particularly because the Western Conference more generally is pretty open beyond the Thunder. But yeah, irrespective of that, like Luka is 25. Like that's the. This is why it's shocking, because you very rarely see a player, you know, a top three, top five player, wherever you rate Luka. Those guys generally don't get moved, but they definitely don't get moved when they're 25 years of age, entering their prime and seemingly on track to be someone who plays 15 seasons with your franchise and will go down as like a legend of the sport more generally, but certainly a legend of the Dallas Mavericks. Like, that's the part that I just can't get over, I suppose. It's an extremely bold move, probably an extremely dumb move. But yeah, there is an element of this where I'm like, okay, I can see how it makes sense maybe now, like literally this season or maybe next season for the Mavericks. But thinking more broadly and yeah, over the next 5-10 years, it does not compute at all. And yeah, he's Nico Harrison's press conference, which I saw snippets of just earlier. It's like, what is this guy talking about? So it's bizarre. It's bizarre. It's crazy.
Doug, what are your thoughts on the trade? Like, do you think the Mavs, do you agree with Mark and I, have a chance of like maybe getting in the second round this year, doing some damage?
I'm going to tell you something that'll probably annoy you. I don't even really want to talk about it. Like, it's so dumb. Everything we're saying has already been regurgitated in the first like 5 minutes of when this trade happened.
Yeah, but not by us.
Like, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's so dumb. There's like just nothing else to add about it. It's like what could you, what? There's nothing interesting. It's just like, this is a world-class idiotic move. There's just nothing else to say about it. Like, it's just like, it's so bad. There's no analysis that can be had here. It's just like, you know, it's like listening to someone talk about their strategy after they won the lottery or something. It's just like, there's just, you're just happy you won the lottery. Like, there's nothing else to add. Like, if you're a Lakers fan, that's probably how you feel. Like, I don't know, like, what else there is to say about it. Like, there's nothing. Like, yeah, the Mavs might be okay. Like, clearly they'll be a little bit better this year with a healthy AD than a Doncic that's not playing. But, I mean, he was scheduled to come back in a week. I just, you know, so even then, I don't know. This is just, it's an all-time dumb move.
I do want to talk really quick, though, about the Lakers. Like, so now the Lakers have, you know, obviously Luka and LeBron together. They're in dire need of a center who's, I think, of a defensive caliber now. You know, like, but do you feel like they'll have a better chance of beating the Mavs? Does this change the trajectory for the Mavs, I guess, this year, in your opinion? Are they better or worse, or does it even really matter? Let's start with you, Mark.
It doesn't matter. They're probably, well, I just cut you off, Mark, so
that's okay.
Bad on me. But they're probably better only if Doncic doesn't play. I mean, clearly, if Doncic is healthy, they're better with Doncic than they are with AD. So, you know, some of the weird stuff I've been reading is like behind the scenes, Luka's basically been an alcoholic. He's been having like all these problems. He's like, whatever, difficult to deal with. And it's like, you know, that kind of just feels like stuff people have exacerbated to try and give the Mavericks some type of cover to justify it. Like, maybe there's some problems there. I mean, Dennis Rodman just like took a week off to go party in Vegas. And, you know, that still kind of worked out for us. Okay. Like, I don't know. Like, that's just like superstars party. Like, I just, whatever it is, like, just it doesn't matter enough, like, to make up for what this is. So, I don't think the Mavs are better this year. I don't think they're better next year unless there's just some deep medical thing that's going to be revealed, like, in a month, you know, or something. Like, they just know that this is so much worse than the public knows. That's the only way this is going to work out for them. And maybe that's possible, but, you know, based on what everyone knows now, it just seems insane. It's not like Luka's had a bigger, worse injury history than Anthony Davis has. I mean, there's really just no justification for it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I really like Dallas's roster right now, but if the consequence or the path, the way to get to this roster is by trading Luka, like, that's where it's not a good alternate reality from that perspective, right? Like, yes, I think the Mavericks could be good this year. They could do something interesting things this year. But like, again, like, if the consequence or the ability to do that is by trading Luka and potentially the next 10 years of Luka, like, you just don't do it. Like, that's the part that I just can't wrap my head around. So Yeah, it's crazy. It's bizarre. It's one of the most interesting NBA stories, I guess, that we've had to sort of really think and talk about. But this is a Bulls podcast, Frederick. Can we talk about the beloved Bull?
Absolutely. I just do want to make one final point. Like, everything in life is odds, right? Like, or gambling. Yeah. You know, what are the odds that this is going to work out?
What are the odds of you getting the technology right for this podcast?
Pretty remote, Mark. But that said, pretty remote. But that said, like, I think the odds are better that Luka's going to figure it out. I mean, I know he's like 268 pounds or whatever. I just think the odds are better that he'll eventually figure it out, get his weight under control, get whatever issue he does have off the court under control, than Kyrie and AD winning a title and staying healthy. It's just, it's crazy. Mm. But yeah, you're right. Let's move on. As how does this affect the Bulls? So I made the point, like, I think it does make it more likely that the Warriors make a move. I mean, starting today, they're not they're not even in the play-in. I think that I saw they were 11th. And I do, there has been a ton of rumors about the Warriors either acquiring Zach or Vooch or both. You know, let's get to that. Like, do you guys feel like this trade makes it more likely Zach is moved, less likely, or it's not even relevant? I'll start out with you, Mark, on this one, then we'll go to Doug.
Well, I think what's interesting, you know, connecting the topics, like, what does LeBron do now? Like, does he want to stay in LA and play with Luka? I assume so. Or is he more inclined to do something different now post this trade? And I'm assuming it's the former and he wants to stay in LA. But, like, if for whatever reason LeBron wanted to do something crazy and head to Golden State, then obviously that changes the Levine thing, assuming Levine was even realistically on the move anyway. So, I mean, Doug and I were joking about this before pre-recording, but, like, I haven't missed anything about the Bulls in a lot of different ways, but I haven't missed anything because we're still talking about the same old nonsense. Like, we're still talking about Zach LaVine in the trade market and, you know, whether his contract will be an impediment to him being moved. We're still talking about Nikola Vucevic and, you know, his contract, that additional year, and how that's an impediment to potentially moving him, or how the Bulls want a first and other teams want seconds, blah, blah, blah. So, I don't know if I don't know if this trade really changes anything for the Bulls, because the Bulls are probably stuck in the same situation they've been stuck in for the last 2 to 3 years anyway. So I don't think it materially changes much. You could say maybe the Lakers maybe are less inclined to want Vooch now because he doesn't really make sense there now. Yes, they need a center, but I don't think they need a groundbound center. They certainly don't need a bad defensive one, given you know, their wings now are Luka Doncic and 40-year-old LeBron James. I don't know if this trade impacts the Zach's market as well, because, like I said before, like, his contract is still what his contract is. So I don't think it changes anything. It may impact things for, like, Jimmy Butler or LeBron James or some of these other names, but I don't think it really impacts Vooch and LaVine, because these guys were probably always going to be another team's third, fourth, fifth backup option.
Doug?
I don't think it does anything for LaVine or Vooch. Maybe makes it even less likely they're traded. I don't know what Golden State will do, but the idea that Golden State is currently tied for 10th is going to make some really major move to go all in just doesn't strike me as particularly likely. I think they're starting to get realistic that, like, it's just not going to happen, you know, there again. And they have to do something else. So I don't see them giving up significant assets to make a move. The one thing I could see happening that maybe is more likely after this trade is you look at what Dallas needs, and, you know, Derek Lively is a guy who might not play this year, and Dallas now has, like, probably a 1.5 year window to try and win around Kyrie and AD. And, you know, Lively might not be in one of those two playoff runs. And, I mean, who knows what he'll be in the second one, but, like, you already have a good feeling, like, maybe he's not going to come back and be an impact player this year. So, you know, that's a piece that maybe you're like, yeah, we made this trade to win now. We're going to move Lively for something else. You know, AD doesn't want to play center. So maybe there's some scenario there where it's like PJ Washington, who also doesn't fit super well, and Derek Lively for Vucevic feels like maybe a little bit too rich, but, like, something like that is something I threw out on Twitter. They need another ball handler. You know, maybe it's like PJ Washington and something for Kobe White. Maybe you could do Lively for Io, and you throw in a pick for us or something, depending on how you value these things. But so I think the options that might materialize is, I feel like Dallas is going to make other moves to complement this move. And so to the extent this might impact the Bulls, it's going to impact them in the way of stuff going to Dallas from Chicago. And I don't think there's a realistic way LaVine can be part of that, but there are some realistic ways that, you know, Kobe, Io, or Vooch could be part of that, depending on what happens. And not, clearly, I would say normally under that Dallas would canvass the league and look for the best deal they can, but we already know from their general manager that's not how he operates. He just sets his eyes on one team and then takes that player. So, you know, we just have to hope he loves Vooch and he's not going to look anywhere else. And then maybe something happens.
I'd love to get your thoughts. You know, this has been kind of a big topic the last week. I was on with Waddle and Sylvie earlier in the week. Mark, you don't see this, but the state of, maybe you do, the state of Chicago sports is arguably the worst it's ever been. I think anyone could reasonably say that the Cubs are probably the only team that has a realistic shot of consistently being over 500 in the next couple of years. I know there's a lot of Bears fans listening to this saying, hey, what about the Bears? I mean, I've heard that every year for the last 15 years. And this is the argument I made with Waddle and, with Sylvie, where he was saying, what team is causing more heartache? And to me, it's the Bears. Like, I brought up the point, out of the last 15 years, since the last time the Bears won a playoff victory, the Bulls have had a higher winning percentage in 11 of those 15, including the last four. So this year was the year the Bears were supposed to be awesome, and they sucked again. Regardless, they're all in the running. They're all terrible. And I think in terms of following in Chicago, it's the Bears 1, the Cubs 2, the Bulls 3, and then the Hawks and White Sox probably tied somewhere down there. That said, this is a low point, no doubt, for the Chicago Bulls in terms of fan passion, fan interest, you know, obviously with the issues with the TV, etc. I'd love to get both your thoughts on, why do you think that is, number one, and number two, what's it going to take to fix it? We'll start out with you, Doug.
I mean, why it is obvious. It just, we've gotten no good young prospects who are really high upside, and we're also not making the playoffs. So the people who maybe want to root for development and the next thing have no real hope. And the people who want to root for the present have no real hope. And they've been in this boat for now. This will be 3 years in a row. And it was kind of felt pretty obvious, like we talked about it. At least I talked about it a lot. Maybe you got in 1 year after me, but that this is not a group you want to build on. Like the year we had the 46 wins, I was telling you in the offseason, we need to trade Zach and Vooch and DeMar now. And you fought with me about it a lot. But I said, we just need to get out of all of these guys. And I had this plan where you get like 6 first-round picks for these guys. That was like pretty reasonable. And people were like, oh, it's nowhere near enough value. And now it's like, well, Jesus, you wish you had done that. And so it's like, and then we've just repeated it. So like maybe it wasn't so obvious that year. You didn't know Lonzo wasn't going to play at the beginning of that year. And you hoped you'd recapture the magic of the previous year at the beginning before he got hurt. And then it comes out he's not going to play and whatever. And you can kind of see, squint real hard and see why we ended up in that boat. But there's just been nothing that's changed. And so you've moved from like loving or hating or being passionate to just apathy, right? Like you just can't summon yourself to care anything because there's just nothing going on. Like you can't be passionate. It's like, I think that's why the White Sox, you said they'd be like tied for last. They just had like maybe the worst baseball season in the history of baseball. And you have them like fifth in place of like how much negativity there is around them. And it's the same thing. It's just no one cares. Like, just no one cares anymore. And I feel that's where the Bulls are going, where it's just like, you just can't summon any energy to care about it. You know, at least with the Bears and with the Hawks, it's like they have like this young star talent. Like, the Hawks have some young stars and the Bears have some young stars. And maybe those guys aren't living up to everything you wanted or whatever. But like, there's like some reason you thought it was going to go better and then it didn't. And so, because the improvement didn't match your expectations, you feel sad about it. And you're passionate about it and you're looking for reasons to blame as to why that didn't happen. But no one looks at this bull season and goes, man, I am shocked with what's going on right now. I can't believe that we are not a playoff team. And I mean, it's like, it's exactly what you thought it would be. And it's been that way for a while. So I think that's the main thing. It's just, it's like going into it, you knew you had no real hope of the playoffs and you knew you had no real hope of watching the next star develop. And so what is there? There's just nothing.
Yeah, I don't know if I can put it better or add to that, really. Like, I mean, I'm not a Bears fan. I'm not a whatever the other teams are, Hawks and other things. But you started this out as like saying the Chicago sports has been, you know, is in a bad place. Like, when has it never not been in a bad place? And again, like, this is the theme of the podcast. I haven't spoken about the Bulls or anything, you know, in a long time, or, you know, done this sort of thing for a long time. But again, pre-podcast, Doug and I were joking, like, the more things change, the more things stay the same. And nothing has really changed for the Chicago Bulls. They're boring. I guess I'm somewhat of a testament of that, in the sense that I felt the need to, not the need to disengage, but I didn't feel any loss, I guess, disengaging from this franchise when I decided to prioritize definitely more important things in my life, which I probably should have been prioritizing regardless, even if the Bulls were good or bad. But it wasn't. It was an extremely easy decision from that perspective, because there was nothing to lose. Because what am I ultimately investing in? What am I watching? There's nothing materially interesting or entertaining about this team. And yeah, Bezalis has some nice dunks here and there, but and I could see a path where maybe he has some star upside, but then what else is there? What else is there? We're not even certain they're gonna have their pick this season. And if they, and let's assume they do, like, do they have their 2026 pick? What is the direction of this team? We're still asking those big fundamental questions that we've been asking for the last 3 to 4 years. There's no real clarity on that. I do not trust Arturis to give clarity on that. And even if he does give clarity on that, do I trust in Arturis to execute on a vision that makes sense? No, I don't. Like, and Doug said it perfectly. Like, those other franchises that you listed, Fred, again, I know nothing about those sports, but I know enough to suggest that those teams seemingly have their franchise pillar or someone that reasonably can be marketed as such, whereas the Bulls just don't have that. Like, I'm not interested in watching a soon-to-be 25-year-old Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu. Like, they're good players. I enjoy them in terms of, you know, what they bring to teams and rotations and those sorts of things, and I think they definitely could contribute to real teams somewhere else. But that team isn't the Chicago Bulls. Patrick Williams is still maddeningly, like, frustrating. I mentioned Bezalis before. Yeah, I like some of his upside. But again, he's not like this super incredible, you know, blue chip asset where you can definitely see where he could take a franchise. Beyond that, like, what am I looking at? What am I looking at? Am I meant to be excited about Julian Phillips and Dalen Terry or Dama Sinoga or whoever the hell I'm meant to be thinking about on this team? Like, it's just not an interesting or appealing team more generally. And that's for Bulls fans, but, you know, the NBA media landscape more generally, like, no one talks about the Bulls. No one cares about the Bulls, and for good reason. So I think all of that is justified. It has been justified for the last 3 to 4 years, and it remains justified now, and will probably be so for the next 3 to 4 years to come, Frederick.
I think it's a little deeper and darker than that, though. I mean, because it's only really 3 years. It was 3 years ago, almost to the day, we were still in first in the East or somewhere close to it, and the city was excited about the team, really excited. You know, Ball had just gone out. Caruso had just gone out with injuries at this point 3 years ago. But no one would remotely expect Ball to miss two full seasons. And there was a lot of, you know, at that time, DeMar was playing at an almost MVP level. So there was a ton of excitement. And now it's gone from that. And the Bears have had nothing in that same time period. They were terrible all for three straight years. But we've gone from that to this with the Bulls. And I think it, you just got to go back to, we began this rebuild in June of 2017 when we traded Jimmy Butler. And that rebuild yielded, go back in time, two All-Stars in Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen, Kobe White, rock-solid player, Wendell Carter Jr., starter, quality player, Daniel Gafford, Thad Young was playing at a high level, and the number 4 overall pick, 2020 draft, that's what was handed to Acme. That's what they inherited. And then they traded away 3 first-rounders. They traded away Thad Young, who was a tradable asset, later yielded a first-round pick for the Spurs. 4 second-rounders. You know, that's a ton of draft capital. All this stuff, and here we are in February of 2025, and Zach LaVine is still our freaking best player. And Kobe White is arguably our most tradable asset. Maybe Ayo, you know, you can have that debate, but Kobe White's a top 3 tradable asset on this team. That's why I'm upset. That's why I'm angry. That's why I'm frustrated that we're going to entrust these guys with a rebuild. But I think for you, Mark, and more of the fan base, it's a little deeper and darker. You're upset for a slightly different reason. That's because all you guys were wrong. Like, you thought this couldn't get any worse in the previous front office, you know, and there were justified concerns. Others had an irrational hate for the previous front office, and I agree, because of Boylan, it was time for them to go. But these new guys, we were acting like they were playing 3D chess just because they weren't guard packs. Most of the fans I know thought P. Will was a great prospect. He belonged out there. He's 19. Most of the fans I know, including me, love the Vooch trade. They love the DeMar trade, the Ball trade, all these trades. I'm just as guilty to some degree on some of these moves. But in retrospect, the P. Will Mafia was wrong. Everybody was wrong. These dopes are far worse than Gar Pax, who could at least draft well. And the fans don't like being wrong. And that's why people have said, screw it. You know, I really think that's more of it.
So you're blaming people for being... So your reasoning for,
I'm blaming
for
the
Chicago Bulls' apathy more generally across Chicago, the US, the globe, whatever it might be, is because people are mad at themselves because of their, I don't know, back in 2020 or 2021, they thought AK could be the shepherd that led the flock away from the Garpax era, and they're mad at themselves. They're definitely not mad at the Chicago Bulls for all of the moves that happened thereafter. That's definitely not the case. It's because they're mad at themselves. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying at a certain level.
Is there any other way to see it? I mean, when Mark clarifies it that way, it does really seem like the best. Most,
I mean, I was
outcome,
expecting I some sort of nonsense. Like, I mean, more generally, every time I tune into this podcast, I'll say this: I have not missed an episode. I will never miss an episode of this podcast because it will always provide me an opportunity to laugh at something. And I knew that coming on here today, there would be some sort of soliloquy about how Garpax wasn't actually bad and how they were this and that, blah, blah, blah. I knew that was all, like, the hits are being played as well. Let's put it that way. But the way that you got there, Frederick, I think that was a new and creative way, and I think you deserve a shout-out for that. I was not expecting that turn for you to be blaming the masses for their own discomfort and displeasure. That was interesting and creative. So, like I said, shout-out to you. But I'm not angry. I'm not sad. I just don't really care. I don't feel anything. It's from that perspective. So
just to answer this question, yeah. Would you rather have Gar and Pax run this rebuild, or would you rather have Acme run it?
I would rather have what I have right now. He's not giving a shit about the Chicago Bulls. It's better.
Doug, what say you? Doug, what say you? Answer that question.
Well, I mean, I think it's... I think if Mark was forced to answer with one of those two choices... And I think anyone who really watches would answer that probably at this point, you'd rather have Gar Pax back. That doesn't mean that that's a great solution, though. Like, you know, and I'll say this to your point about fans not liking Acme and feeling bad about themselves. Like, no, for sure, no. Like, if you ever see any new head coach or any new GM ever come in, like, those positions are usually, like, hired to be fired is the phrase. It like does not take a long time for everyone to hate the head coach or the GM. And when whoever replaces them, they almost always love right away. Like if Ben Johnson has a rough first 8 games next year, he's the head coach of the Bears for you, Mark. And in Chicago, people are just beside themselves with joy that we got him as our head coach.
I agree.
If he has a rough, if he has a rough 8 first games, people are going to like turn on him. Like all the people who thought he was the greatest and whatever are going to turn on him in like 2 seconds. Like that is just the nature of head coach and GM positions. And so, yeah, everyone loved Acme at the beginning because it was like, oh, something different is happening. And we were frustrated with these other guys and they were there forever. And so, of course, there was this, I'll call it the dead cat bounce of like, I'm just so happy that anything happened. I never thought anything would happen, that I'm glad these guys are gone. But I don't think anyone then looks at that like 2 years later and is like, wow, I was so wrong. No one connects those dots. That's just the nature of like these positions. So these guys are gone. They got to go. Maybe to flip it back, a better question would be, how long do you think they can stay? And I'll ask you first, Mark, how long do you think Michael Reinsdorf can live in this scenario? We're going to assume the Bulls do not make the playoffs this year and that they do not move up in the draft, but they do keep their picks. So we'll say they draft 9th. Which is, I think, what they're slotted in right now.
Not
say they
7th?
Draft 9th.
Come on, Doug. That was an opportunity.
How long do you think these guys have?
That was an opportunity to use the 7 propaganda. That was another thing I was expecting to hear at some point during the show.
Well, they can't get to 7th. They can't move up to 7, and like they can't. There's like no way two teams are going to pass.
Well,
I didn't want to go into Fred Land.
That's not true.
Let's see.
What are you talking about? Look it up, dude. They absolutely can't get to seven. Portland's almost got more wins than they do. Seven's still here, buddy. Here's how it goes. 7 pick and 25. 7 pick and 26. Seven and 27.
I gotta workshop this a little. Of Red missing every seventh base prophecy he's ever made.
I think it's literally at 7 years now, probably, to be honest. Because Lowry was drafted in 2017, so that mantra is probably 7 years old at this point. But coming back to Doug's question, I have no idea what to... I don't know, because we don't really... I mean, the only track record we have of this is their previous iterations with, obviously, Garpax and Kraus. And those guys were severely longly tenured for a number of different reasons, but ultimately success... in part, enabled them to stay as long as they did. Definitely Kraus more so than the Garpax era, which definitely did not have as much success as Kraus did, as those MJ Bulls did. Bulls era's teams did. But nonetheless, like that's what we go to the memory bank on, the fact that those two executives, or those executive teams, were able to hang on as long as they did. But they had a lot more success, relative to success, let's say, compared to what AK did, or how it has. So I have no idea. Like on one part, you think, oh, this... The Reinsdorfs are extremely loyal. They like their guys. They're, for whatever reason, whether you want to call it incompetence, that they let them just do their thing and probably let them do their thing too long without intervening. There's that element too, but I don't know how you balance that, I guess, to the fact that the guys that hanged around for so long, they had some modicum of success, some more than others. But then, you know, Arturas hasn't had any of that, really. But then, like I said, ownership is extremely loyal. They don't like to make change. So how do you balance that out? Where does that all sit? I don't think he's going to be here 15, 16 years without something dramatically changing in the same sense it did for Garpax when they landed Derrick Rose. I think that's what the Bulls are ultimately needing at this point. Like, luck isn't a strategy or hope isn't a strategy, but that's kind of what needs to happen for the Bulls more generally, but probably for Arturas to... realistically keep his job. Now, maybe he's going to keep his job anyway because the Dwarfs are dumb and stupid and don't really care about the Bulls, so long as it's making a profit and generating revenue. But objectively speaking, Arturas probably should have been gone by now already. And assuming that the Dwarfs have some level of respect or pulse, then he's probably gone very soon anyway. But maybe something lucky happens or something fortunate happens, which this fan base desperately needs to occur. But similarly, like Arturas probably needs that luck as well. So I don't know, Doug. If we keep plodding along on this current trajectory, then I would hope that he's gone within the next 12 months, preferably within the next 2 to 3 months. That way he doesn't have this offseason to do whatever he wants to do. But I can't trust ownership to deliver on that, I guess.
Well, let me just jump in really quick. I think the progression of Matas has bought him some time. I think it's an irrational evaluation of the kid. Like, I really like him. I don't want to act like I don't. He seems like a really good kid, and there's a lot of good stuff to like about him. But, you know, he hasn't exactly shot the ball well and for long periods of time this year. Now, I understand he's getting more minutes. He's developing. He's getting better. I think Billy's handling him well. He needs to get stronger. But there's a reason to be excited about him. Like, he seems to be getting better. He's shown me a lot, especially recently. So I think that's bottom time. I think he'll have at least 2 more years. If they end up with the 11th pick and they lose that pick and hand it to the Spurs, I think things are going to get ugly real quick. But I'm almost certain, Zach will be traded. And once he goes, this team's going to just, like, fall off a cliff in terms of, like, wins. So they'll have a pick this year. We'll see. People will get irrationally excited about that pick. He'll be here for at least 3 more years. That's what I think.
I think I've noted this.
What say you, Doug?
Kraus was gone after 5 years of ineptitude. Now, he brought the Bulls 6 titles. Paxson was...
No, he didn't.
Okay, whatever. They won 6 titles under his reign, and Reinsdorf gave him credit.
That's correct.
For his role as general manager contributing to those titles. Under Paxson,
okay,
they left after 3 years of missed playoffs. And Paxson didn't bring any titles, but... they did get to the Eastern Conference Finals. They got to the playoffs, like, I think it was like 11 out of 13 years before they had that kind of slump or something around that amount. Before the rebuild.
Before the rebuild.
Yeah. Something 11 to 13 years. Butler. They were in the playoffs. And then three misses, and he was out. So this is going to be Acme's third miss. And, you know, like it doesn't seem like they're going to project to make it next year. We can't tell what's going to happen. But based on the assets they have, you don't think they're going to make the playoffs next year. And if they don't move up in the draft and get one of these guys who looks like a future star, you're still going to not have a lot of real meaningful hope about where you can go in the future. And I think a fourth missed playoff then will get them out. The one thing that I think is a little different, and I just wonder how the Bulls look at it internally and have no way to know, is with the play-in tournament, they can squint real hard and be like, well, we made the playoffs each of the past 2 years because we were in the play-in tournament. And I don't think fans look at it that way so much. You got like whatever, one, two games, but maybe they look at it that way. Like this was, we still got to the postseason. We got past the regular season and we played a game afterwards. Mm-hmm. And if they look at that differently than the way I looked at it, like this is your third playoff miss, then I think you're right. It's going to be at least three more years. And if they look at it as like three playoff misses, then I think Mark is going to be more right. Like it's like maybe even this summer they're out, or if not, one more year of misses and they're out. And so I think that's like the part that's hard for me to kind of guess at. But I feel like that's the line. Like they do not want to miss the playoffs over and over again. And it just really kind of depends if they feel like the play-in is kind of this postseason play that means something or not.
Well, yeah, said. And like to that point, and saying, you know, extending on your playoffs and where the standings ultimately land, like that's probably going to determine where things are. And it connects back to what you just said there, Doug, but also to my point before around luck. Like if for whatever reason they somehow sneak into a play-in and that's considered success, then that might be a key reason for keeping him on in the eyes of the Dorfs. Similarly, like if for whatever reason the Bulls have that luck that I was sort of speaking about and they lock themselves into, I don't know, if it's not Cooper Flagg, then a top four situation, and they keep that, not only keep that pick, but move up in the draft, which is definitely possible in this flattened odds and world that we live in, like that would be another reason for AK to probably have an extended runway here. Like if the Bulls keep their 2025 pick, let's park the idea of what happens for 2026 and beyond. But like assuming Bozalis continues to play well in the next 2-3 months, he continues to show signs, and then thereafter you were able to somehow jump up and grab a top four pick, potentially even the number one pick in this draft, then he's secure for the next 3 to 5 years thereafter. So a lot of it is contingent on what's going to play out over the next few weeks or months. Let's see where it all lands out, but yeah, it's going to be fascinating nonetheless, but there's no reason to expect anything different until something different lands, I guess, would be my overarching take.
I don't think Michael is dumb, though. Like, at some point, he's got to be sitting in that office saying, holy cow, we just signed Patrick Williams to a 5-year contract with a player option, and he's playing like this. You know, like, looking at some of these moves these guys have made, they're just appalling. And I understand Williams is playing better, and there's, you know, off the bench, and there's no way he can continue at this level as bad as he's been. I mean, maybe there is, who knows, but those are kind of moves that get people fired. So Modest's improvement is being counterbalanced by Williams. He is playing better lately. I don't think he's going to be this bad all year. I do feel like they're going to end up with a top 10 pick. He'll take that pick. He'll be here 3 years. They're going to trade Zach. They're trying to trade Vooch. They got to trade Ball. You know, we'll see what happens, but I think all that will ensure he's here for 3 more years. The only way this doesn't happen is if they end up with the 11th pick and, you know, the team in Monas really, you know, does not show improvement for the rest of the season and really kind of craters, and Williams also continues to struggle. At that point, I think there's some hard conversations internally about whether or not this is working.
Yeah, I'm only going to jump in and say I'm not sure that Michael Reinsdorf is all that smart. I mean, like, I have no opinion on him one way or the other. But whether he's smart or not smart, like, and I don't mean that as like, I think he's really dumb, just to be clear. Just like, we have no way to know. I've never had a conversation with Michael Reinsdorf. Neither has anyone else here. Like, no way to know. The one thing I would say is it's like, even if it's almost like he's more likely to fire AK if he's really dumb. Because at some point, if he's really dumb, he'll just like log on to Twitter and whatever and be like, oh man, every fan hates this guy. Like, he'll be like way more likely to be influenced by the general fan outrage and the sports media outrage and all this other stuff. And if he's actually a really bright guy, he's way more likely to double down on his own, like, feel like his own thoughts. Like, oh, I think this guy is really good and he just got unlucky, and he'll be more likely to lean into his own bias. So I think it's actually almost works the opposite of that in some ways. And if he's really, really good at what he does beyond that, then maybe he's like, yes, I'm smart. I lean into my own bias, but then I also evaluate the situation as terrible. So maybe I guess like the middle ground where he's kind of smart, but not smart enough is the one where he sticks with AK. The really dumb thing, I think he'll overreact just because the media thinks he should, and he'll just buy in. And then if he's really good, he would realize this just isn't it, and he'd change. So that's kind of like my way of gauging how this pans out.
I mean, even the dumbest, though, owner has to look at Acme and see what the issue is. I mean, they just can't admit when they're wrong. They're just very reticent to make mistakes. This guy went 2 full years, didn't make any moves because he thought continuity would help. He signed Vooch to another contract after everyone knew this didn't work out. He signed Williams to a 5-year deal. This guy cannot admit it when he's made a mistake, and he's really poor at moving off those mistakes. And so, like, I just can't believe that, you know, the owner of the Chicago Bulls is sitting there looking at this and is that dumb to say this guy has an issue with kind of like self-evaluation. What say you, Mark?
In terms of AK, yeah, sure. But like, I mean, it's not ultimately his decision, unless he walks away from the job, right? Or whatever. If for whatever reason he decided to walk away, sure, which he's not going to, why would he? This was a critique of Arturas coming in. Like, there was reports, or, you know, not reports, but when people were discussing AK when he landed the role as the lead executive in Chicago, like, one of the negatives, if you want to call it a negative, was that he's overly analytical and potentially sometimes slow to react. I remember reading that at the time, and we've seen that played out. Yeah. It wasn't an overly discussed thing. Like, it was a thing where everyone was harping on his record and the fact that he had been part of 2 really good organizations. And I was obviously the key beast being the Jokic acquisition. But I remember hearing, reading from Nuggets people that was, he's more of a backroom operator type. And we're seeing that play out as well. So it's not surprising when you go back and look at these things and remember these things that you read at the time, back in 2020 or whatever it was. Did I expect it to play out like this? No. Am I angry at myself? And that's why I've disengaged with the Bulls, because of AK's performance? No. But also at the same time, like, it is bizarre how it's all played out. Now, some of it, if I want to be somewhat objective and play devil's advocate a little bit, this new CBA is just terrible more generally, and that is impacting the Bulls. It's impacting every franchise, but it's certainly impacting the Bulls in terms of their ability to move Zach. So I think they have the right idea and the right willingness to move on from Zach and Vooch and Lonzo. They want to do the right thing, I think. At least that's, you know, based on reports. It sounds like they are making calls, trying to be aggressive, trying to make trades. So I don't think they're fundamentally wrong now. I think they're trying to do the right thing now. The issue is all their mistakes before now has led them to this path where they're somewhat hamstrung. Some of it's their own doing, but some of it is just the evolving CBA situation, where it's frankly significantly more difficult now to make a good trade, let alone a trade for a tough contract like Zach LaVine. So that hasn't helped them. I think Zach, Vooch, whoever, may have been able to be moved a lot sooner if this new CBA didn't come in. But at the same time, AK needed to be on the front foot moving these guys and not extending these guys to the dollars that he did. So, I don't know. It's a weird, dumb situation. I just don't trust the Dorfs to, like, are we even sure they care about it? Like, we talk about, like, Michael Reinsdorf logging onto Twitter and seeing people's comments, or, you know, hearing from other people this and that, or even just watching the product himself. Like, do we even know they care to that degree to want to instill some sort of change? Like, do they really actively care about that? Like, like I said before, as long as the dollars are running through, people are filling the stadium to some degree, and the money is still good, like, why make change?
The one thing I always say about that with the money is people always say, like, well, the money is rolling through. But the Bulls could make so much more money. Like, they're a major market. They could make so much more money if they were run well. And they have to know that, right? Like, And I think that's why Gar-Pak stayed for so long. Like, they made the playoffs almost every year. You had years where you got to the second round. You got the Eastern Conference Finals once. There were, like, lots of periods where there was, like, lots of hope. And, you know, the ticket prices went up way more over those eras than they did now, right? Like, so it's like your price per ticket can go up more if you have some success. Your radio, TV, local deals are worth way more money when you have some success. So it's not just like, oh, we post high attendance numbers, but no one shows up to the game. We don't make the money on parking now. We don't make the money on concessions. We're not making as much on our merchandise sales. Like, they would be making so much more money if this team was good. So, like, yeah, money is rolling in. They're not in any danger of losing money. The NBA is now maybe similar to the NFL, where it just the TV money is so big, it doesn't matter how incompetent you are, you're going to make money just by that national TV deal. Like, you can't lose money anymore. Like, the NFL, like, if you own an NFL team, the only way you can lose money is if you paid, like, $5 billion and you financed it and you owe, like, $500 million a year in loans or something stupid. Like, but the actual profits coming in, the operating profit of the NFL is just insane. So the only way you can lose money is on financing of your team. That's obviously not an issue for Reinsdorf, who owns it outright and isn't paying any, like, financing, you know, payments on it, nor is he paying any financing on the stadium. So he has got none of these, like, weird costs. So he just, it's going to be operating profits no matter what, but he could be making twice what he is if this team was good. So I think like, yes, I agree they only care about the money. Like, I think that's very true. And if we got to the point where they spend, like, $100 million in luxury tax payments to win a title, I think the answer is no. But they could definitely make a move because they could be making $50 million more in profit and being a borderline first, second round playoff exit team, you know, with a competent GM, even if they aren't going to win a title and they aren't going to make all these crazy luxury tax moves.
I 100% agree with you that they have been leaving money on the table for years now, and that this franchise more generally is a sleeping giant, and it's just being run like a small operation for whatever reason. But coming back to your point, Doug, about, like, we just not knowing a lot about the Dorfs more generally, like, something that we, another thing that we don't know about them and we can just infer is, like, what is their risk profile more generally on things? Based on how things have played out, I would have to say, I assume that they are very, very conservative when it comes to risk. Now, I know the counter argument to that is, well, there's literally no risk in jettisoning Arturas away and restarting with someone else. And I definitely would support that argument. But like I said, like, if you're still making millions upon millions, you've still got a franchise that in terms of its value is increasing year on year. And to your point before, like, you can do literally nothing and still make bank. There's no impetus for change, I suppose. There's no catalyst or need for change. And the only reason change occurred last time was things got so bad that John Paxson himself basically resigned. Like, this is not something that, what's the name? The Dorfs forced on John last time around. It was, at best, a mutual decision. But from, again, the reporting at the time, it sounded like Paxson himself was the one that kind of stepped away. So I just don't understand or know what to believe with these guys, this ownership group. And you can infer it a lot of ways, but maybe that risk profile is just not at a point where they feel the need to do anything different. Because like I said, why do something when you're so successful? And yes, you could maybe make more money than what you already are. But when you're already making millions upon millions and own a $1 billion franchise,
one quick note about that. I believe this is true. The Reinsdorfs, most of their money is from the Bulls and the White Sox. Like, most of their net worth is tied up in this. They're not like a group that has like $50 billion in wealth outside of this. Most of their wealth has come from these franchises and the profits win. So you're probably right that they probably are conservative compared to a group that maybe has, you know, tons and tons of deep pockets. On the flip side of that, because they have no debt and no financing, they do have flexibility.
Yeah. No, they're real estate and asset owners, and there's always good return in that side of the business, I suppose. There's significantly less risk. I mean, these aren't tech guys. They're not venture capitalists or anything like that. Those sorts, the types of people that are entering the league now. But yeah, I don't know. We're assuming a lot of things here, but based on that, there's no reason to assume anything's, at least based on history, there's no reason to assume anything's going to change.
There's no excuse for this team being this bad in Chicago. When you look at Milwaukee, you look at Cleveland, they've been able to build contenders there. For all the hatred for Gar Pax in their first 8 years, they drafted four very good players in Deng, Ben Gordon, Kirk, and Taj. They drafted three great players in Rose, Noah, and Butler. And these dopes in the first 4 years, Acme, have drafted one good player in Iowa. They've missed on Williams. They missed on Terrible. Maybe Modest is to be determined. But, you know, there's just no excuse. There's just no excuse. Everybody wants to blame the Dorfs. To me, it always comes down to, in Chicago for the Bulls, are the players you're drafting good enough? And they just haven't been good enough, period. Can extend this maybe 5-10 minutes, but I did want to get Mark's thoughts on his countryman, Josh Giddey, in the interim since our last discussion. I've warmed up a little bit to Josh. I've become more of a Giddey-it.
What?
And I think Doug is strayed a little further away. I mean, Mark, come on. I mean, you got to admit he's got offensive talent. Come on. He's got some ability on the offensive end. You're going to deny that? I mean, he occasionally shows flashes of greatness. But I'd like to get your thoughts. What do you think the Bulls should do with Josh Giddey before the season is over or in the offseason?
My thoughts have not changed at all. And I can't remember what last thought I put out there into the ether, but he's bad. He's bad at basketball. He stinks. I think that was my position last time, and that remains unchanged. He's not good. If anything, he's regressed since joining the Bulls, or at best, plateaued. He's not a player that I want anything to do with, irrespective of what it's going to cost me, because his archetype is bad. He's a terrible, terrible athlete. His defense is still bad. His shooting remains, and he's probably still on a path for being very bad. Yes, he can do some interesting things with his ability to pass the ball. Yes, he's a fantastic rebounder, and he can lead a break. But I just think the type of player that he is and the limitations he puts on the structure of your team is so bad that I would not want anything to do with him. And yeah, okay, maybe if he was willing to accept a meager salary to be a backup point guard, then in that and you know play 15 to 20 minutes a game, and then potentially maybe in that scenario I would bring him back. But that's not seemingly what he wants. Nor does it sound like that's what the Bulls want of him. They want him to be their starting point guard because they like the way he operates. His identity is the Bulls' team identity, I guess, in terms of what Mark Eversley said about the way he plays and the way they want to play. But I think he's bad at basketball. I would not want anything to do with Josh Giddey now, certainly, but definitely not on his next contract. And if they're not trading him at the deadline, then I would absolutely be just letting him walk in the offseason because he is bad at basketball. That's my position on Josh Giddey. I hope I made that very clear.
So to summarize, hard pass on Giddey. Doug, what say you?
Hard pass.
Has your opinion changed with some recent decent games?
My opinion is maybe not as bad as Mark's is on Giddey, but it's not far off. You know, my opinion is you need to pay him as a backup player. And if he's willing to take backup money, then I'm okay with Josh. Like, I think my over under for him is like around the mid-level exception. Like, if you get him at the mid-level, I'm okay taking the risk that eventually he learns how to shoot or defend a teeny bit better and can just lead a bench unit or something else. But if it's going to cost more than that, it probably will if we negotiate, because we won't actually force him to go to the market, then no, I don't want any part of him.
If he worked with, you know, maybe Arnold Schwarzenegger or Beachbody and just for really devoted himself to maximizing every ounce of athletic skill that he has and increased his strength greatly, you know, kind of like in Rocky IV, if he just did that Rocky IV training for an entire 2-year period, I think he would be pretty good if he came back and just, you know, I think there's a good chance that he would have some talent there. But
the issue with Josh Giddey, sorry to cut you off, but this is similar in Ben Simmons, and I know this is an easy comparison to draw given they're both Australian, but in the way that people banged on about Ben Simmons not being left-handed and he was right-handed, Josh Giddey is not a point guard. And the sooner he accepts he's not a point guard, the sooner the team that he's on accepts he's not a point guard and he's actually closer to Kyle Anderson than he is a Jason Kidd type, then that will be better for Giddey. it'll be better for the team he's on. And maybe connecting to your point just there, Frederick, if he bulks up and gets bigger and gets stronger, then maybe he can play power forward, and then it becomes less of an issue that he can't guard guards or wings in that regard. He's not a point guard. He's a... I don't even know what you'd class him. He's just a hybrid player, I guess, from a position standpoint. But he's definitely not a point guard. I don't want him on ball in any shape or form. Certainly not on defense. And yeah, I think his best position is at four, probably. And probably as a backup power forward. A jack-of-all-trades type forward. A Boris Diaw-like sort of player. Now, he's nowhere near as good as Boris Diaw. Probably closer to Kyle Anderson. But like, that's the player he is. He's not a point guard. He's bad athletically. The shot isn't there. He needs to change who he is. He probably won't. He stinks. Okay. Let's move on.
All right. Last note, I do have to show you guys a story with Gar Forman. A pretty good story. Get ready for this. I think this says quite a nice thing about Gar. So my son is a sophomore on the varsity team at St. Ed Green Wave. And he's had some really good moments this year. He had 20 points a couple weeks ago. He had 12 yesterday against Ronnie Fields and Hope Academy. Nice little shout out to my son Ben, who I named after Ben Gordon. That said, one of his teammates, Matthew Morris, who's a senior, is an unbelievable player. This guy's going to be all conference, incredible. He had 53 points in a high school game last Wednesday. 53.
Wow. Shout out to Matthew Morris.
After the game, Matthew Morris, after the game, Gar Forman somehow got his number and sent him a tweet or a congratulations. It says, congratulations, wow, what a game. I don't think I scored 53 points my entire senior year. What an accomplishment. Best of luck moving forward, Gar. What a class act. That is a really nice thing for a guy to send something to a high school player. Mark, I think you need to apologize right now to Gar Forman and say, dude, I'm sorry for all the bad things I said. You are a really good guy, and it's inspired me to be a better father and human by your actions this past week. What say you?
Look, I think we've already had that one slot of this podcast where I expected you to wax poetic about the Gar Pax era. You've now reverted to closing this podcast on Gar Forman shine. I can't accept this, Frederick. I will not say anything nice. In spite of him doing a nice act, I'm sure a lot of bad and evil people have done good and nice things to certain individuals over their time. And this potentially is one of those rare instances where that might also be true as well. So that's what I have to say on the matter.
Doug, do you have any comments on our fellow bus riders?
No, only that it doesn't surprise me at all that your opinion on Gar Forman would change radically because he made a phone call to you.
I thought Gar, you and Gar always got along.
Gar always liked me. Gar was always very nice to me. Like, if you just want to say, like, has this guy been someone who is nice to you? Absolutely. Like, is always would call me at the beginning of every season.
Right. Well,
you know, like, so yeah, like I could say, like, he was a good PR guy. Like, I think that's very true of Gar Forman. He was a very good PR guy.
Is very good too at evaluating talent and drafting good players. Definitely better than these dopes that we currently have now. On that note, let's bring the BRB in and just say, hey, I got to say, it's been awesome having Mark on this show. Mark, can you join us more often? I think hopefully this will be the kind of the incentive you need to start diving deep again into the Bulls and hopefully joining us on the BRB. What say you?
Well, look, I have no incentive to continue watching the Bulls or having any connection with the Bulls, let's be clear. But I do have an incentive to catch up with you and Doug. I miss you guys. That's been the lone aspect of disconnecting with the Bulls. Is, you know, for literally 20 years, let's say, I have been online discussing Bulls with people from all over the world in various shapes and forms. So that's been the weirdest thing, not doing that anymore. And not being able to converse with Bulls fans. And some of that is really good because there are a lot of dumb people out there, right, with bad opinions. Some say potentially the host of this podcast. But I guess the thing that I have missed. The thing I have missed most is connecting with my friends. So I would be happy to get on here again at some point in the future to talk Bulls with you. Or just to catch or up music. With you and Doug more generally. Or music.
Are you still listening to that horrible band? What was that? Between the Dead and the Cow Dung or whatever that thing? What was that band you listened to? What was that band?
Yeah, I've got some good music. I've got some Between the Buried and Me was the band you're referring to. I've got some new stuff I can send you. I think you'll like it.
Tell me one song to go listen to on Spotify, and then I'll give you my opinion after this. Give me a song. Come on. Lay it on. I like that Million Dollar Baby song. I know it's a couple years old, and I see it on the commercial.
I don't know what that song is, but there's a new.
You don't know Million Dollar Baby? Oh, go ahead. Whitechapel. What would you say?
Check out Whitechapel. There's a new album dropping soon, but I think their latest, they've got a new single out now, but previous to that, they had a track called A Visceral Wretch, I think it was called, A Visceral Wretch. I'm pretty sure you'll like that
one. Is there any relation to Chapel Roan with this band?
I don't know who that is.
Your daughter is only one. If she were 7 to 17, you would know exactly who that is.
She's got some good stuff. Okay. I'm a big fan of that Red Wine, whatever that song is. That's a pretty good song. On that note, that we've hit a new low as we've talking about popular music. But, man, I got to tell you, Mark, it's always good to get caught up with your brother. Always good to have you at Talking Bulls. Doug, it's always good to see you, too. And until next time, let's go Bulls.
All right, go Bulls.